Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Hey, listen, by the way, I say this quite often, but I got to make sure you know, if you find yourself driving outside of the pretty broad range of AM, FM capability for WVNN, which pretty much means you're out of North Alabama or out of South Tennessee, that you can go hear us anywhere, all right? That literally, no matter where you are, go to rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. And just click listen live. Wherever you is, there we is. Well, all right, folks, I'm going to get back to this topic, all right? So I've been spending some time unpacking what it means to be a conservative, giving you my right side way on that, all right? This morning, it's all about the fiscal policies. The taxation is the main thing. I mean, I could break fiscal policy down into spending and growing government in big ways and, deficit spending versus balancing the budget, yada, yada, yada. I chose to focus most of that on taxation. And there's this whole desire to make people pay their fair share, you know, that kind of thing liberals talk about. Fair share, pay your fair share, tax the rich. They don't define what that means. They want to define that what that means, and it's just nuts. Hey, Copper, I got to ask you a question though. So, you are in the working world. I don't know how long you've been drawing paychecks in your lifetime, but you've been drawing them less than I have. But do you remember? Was it a shock to you the first time you saw a paycheck with your taxes taken out?
Oh yes, I think that was. I guess I was probably 15, and I was really mad.
Where were you working? Do you remember?
Yes, I was working at a community pool center teaching swim lessons.
Nice.
And I went and asked my dad to explain every single thing they took out of my paycheck.
Well, I remember the first like clock in, clock out paycheck I had, because I had always done something. I had, summer jobs and I did roofing with my cousin's construction company or mowing grass or whatever the case may be. But the first time that I had to clock in was Chick-fil-A. I worked at Chick-fil-A in Parkway City Mall in Huntsville, Alabama. And I got that first paycheck and I was so excited and bam. It was like, who took my money? The government did. It's amazing the wake up call. But one of the things you see, like, there's this whole movement out there to, like I said a moment ago, make them pay their fair share. Well, what does that even mean? I'm not saying don't pay the taxes that you're required to pay, but don't set this notional bar that they're not paying their fair share. There's no definition of fair share. In fact, when they were growing up, my kids will tell you, they're grown now, but if you ask them, fair was the word we were not allowed to say in the house. If my son or daughter were to call in right now, they could probably remember a time when they'd say, Dad, that's not fair. And I'd say, don't say fair. Fair is not allowed in this house. We don't work on fair. So all said and done, this is this notion that we have to redistribute wealth and that people don't pay their fair share. It's such a liberal game. It's a shell game. And as a conservative, I don't buy that. There are margins that you have to set left and right limits on. You don't get to have this nebulous pay their fair share. Until you can define what that means, stop saying it. It's like liberals down in Montgomery saying, we don't fund education enough. What's enough? No answer. Crickets. They don't have an answer. The teachers union just told them to say that they don't fund education enough. That's what happened. I remember a story, by the way. I may have told this on the line on the air before, so if I did, forgive me. But literally, the story goes, so a father's daughter came home from school. She was in college. She came back, and she'd been learning a lot about the world while she was gone. And she literally come to the point that she had begun to change views from where her father had been teaching her over time. And she came home, and she was espousing all the liberal dogma, and she had all the notions, and she was talking about the redistribution of wealth and the pay their fair share. And the dad, finally, who didn't agree with her, finally said, okay, let's just talk about something else. How are your grades doing? Well, Dad, grades are going good. I got all A's. Do you really? Yes, I do. Been working hard. Well, good for you. Well, how's your friend Janie doing? Janie, well, she's not doing that good. She parties. She's been doing a whole lot of just, extracurricular, if you know what I mean. And I think Janie's going to be lucky to get, to pass this semester. Like, mostly D's is what she's telling me. Really? Well, here's what you do, said the dad. he said, darling, go on down to the school registration office, to the admissions and school, the basically the place where they keep all your grades, and just tell them you want to help Janie. Tell them to give Janie half of your A's and you want half of her D's. And she goes, Dad, why would I do that? I'm the one that's been working so hard for all this. He said, congratulations, you're now a conservative. There you go. Dad joke, but it works. It works. All right, folks, we're going to come back and talk about government spending and government tax cuts. And there's breaking news right now. Yep, Representative, who was that on the air just a minute ago? Well, KT McFarland's on the air right now, and General Jack Keane was on there a moment ago talking about Milley, General Milley. What's happening with this? It's getting deep, man. It's getting real deep. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, and live online at rightsideradio.org. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, and just plain right. Time right now, 2:35 in the afternoon. We are moving forward. I got my Right Side rations. I got caffeine and chocolate. That's what it takes to run this show, and apparently that's becoming quite the thing. I'm going to gain weight having this show. Caffeine helps burn it off. The chocolate puts it back on. But anyway, it's just part of it. Right Side rations. That's what I'm calling them. Hey, I see we got a caller on the line, so I'll go ahead and do that because his topic is pretty cogent, pretty solid and right on point. Brian from Huntsville's on line one. Hey, Brian, Phil Williams from Right Side. What's on your mind?
Salutations, but it's over what it means to be a conservative, and I'd say one point is whether you are in our magnificent all-volunteer military or an elected federal politician, even when it hurts, keeping your sworn oaths is conservative. Y'all have a blessed day.
That's true. Hey, Brian, thanks for the call, man. That's keeping your sworn oath, keeping your swore to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in the case of our National Guard and law enforcement and state politicians, the Constitution of the state of Alabama. And I agree. I think there is too often a tendency to think that sworn oaths are just good ideas. No, they're sworn oaths, and you can be held accountable for them. Great call, Brian. Thanks for that. Hey, Copper, so let me ask you this. Is there a particular catalyst, an idea, a concept that kicked you into conservatism yourself? What's on your plate with that?
Well, I've been a Christian for as long as I can remember, and when the idea was articulated to me that conservative thoughts are tied up in our belief of human nature being untrustworthy with power, and that those tended to fall in line with conservative ideas, I generally thought, okay, that seems to make sense on most of these issues. But I think the one where I really got it was when I looked at the national debt for the first time.
Woo! Must have been, done that.
Right? Must have been sixth grade. I think we were doing a policy debate. And looking at the numbers, and I think I remember just being overwhelmed by the stupidity and absurdity of it, and thinking the other side was crazy and that they were self-destructive, and I didn't want to have anything to do with that.
Wow. I tell you what, that's a great segue into an article that I'm holding in my hand right now, as a matter of fact. We did not plan that, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. That was a spontaneous moment in which Copper just gave us her insights, and it happened to match the paper in my hands. So Copper, the bottom line is, yeah, the national debt, it's ungodly huge. Like, there's got to be some comparison. Like, what does $1 trillion look like in real life? Well, it's if you'd had $1 trillion in dollar bills, I dare say it would fill up a basketball gym. And then we're into the, you know, tens, the 20s of trillions in debt. And it's just ungodly. But I don't believe there's any way to pay our way out of it in the short term, because it exists. And the problem we got, too, by the way, is we have opened ourselves up to a position of jeopardy. The Chinese own a great deal of our debt. What do you mean by that, Phil? Where they're the debt holder. They're the bond holders. They're the one, they're buying up U.S. debt, or for that matter, extending, helping extend it. And that puts us in a precarious position. Do you know when I was working in the Pentagon and other places in my career, and I had a very high level clearance, that literally some of the things they consider to be capable of putting you in jeopardy of being compromised by a foreign government in terms of your security clearances and the knowledge you carry is whether or not you have put yourself in a position of having so much debt that it makes you vulnerable to being bribed or vulnerable to being co-opted. I'm just telling you, and here we are. So right now, here's the deal. In the D.C. side, the Democrats, well, they've got the bully pulpit for the moment. 2022 is coming, by the way. But they've got the bully pulpit for the moment, and congressional Democrats right now are in what they pretty much consider to be an impossible situation in their quest to pass this $3.5 trillion spending bill, which, by the way, is lower than what they originally wanted, which, you know, don't be lulled into this, oh, it's only $3.5 trillion. That's what they're saying now. It's only $3.5 trillion. It's $3.5 trillion we don't have, by the way, and a lot of it's social spending. It's, you know, it's just unreal. But what we got right now is there are a few that are standing in the way, and I hope they continue to stand. Most notably among them, of course, is West Virginia's Senator Joe Manchin, and I believe she's from Arizona, is Senator Kyrsten Sinema. And those two are considered to be moderate Democrats, which is interesting because I've seen other things they've done that were absolutely not moderate. But nonetheless, they are standing in the way. In fact, Manchin said today there's no way he's voting for that bill. Well, I hope that's true. Because I'm hearing right now, I'm seeing reports in other places around and about the net that the White House has asked for both Manchin and Sinema to come to a meeting, just the two of them, at the White House so that Biden can lobby them personally. And that's where, you know, it gets a little sticky. Then they start making promises. All right, what have I got to do to get your vote? What can I give you? What do you want written into the bill? What little, you know, pork things do you have back home you care about? Do you want something at your state university named after you? What can we do to make this work? Well, watch out. But there's going to be a lot of twists and turns over the coming month is exactly what Senator Mark Warner just said, and he's a Democrat. And I'm just looking at this thinking, do they have any concept of what this means to the vast scheme of things? Pelosi herself has cracked the door a little bit to a smaller bill. She's saying that $3.5 trillion in cost is what she stands by, but she is still cracking the door a little bit. Oh, we're willing to talk about a slightly lower number. And then, of course, her response is, but what would you cut then? Child care, family medical leave, universal pre-K, home health care? How about yes, 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 and yes? Yes, all of it. Cut it. You don't need it. You don't need child care? No, you don't need the government paying for your child care. Family medical leave? We already have family medical leave. Universal pre-K? We don't have to have government paying for universal pre-K. I'm just telling you, folks, this is getting, it's what they're doing is exactly what I said in my monologue earlier. They're getting all their neat ideas, and they're taking your money to pay for it. And that's where you get into danger zones, all right? If the government is going to provide the essential services, like to provide for the common defense, a military, or to provide for law enforcement or fire support or roads and bridges or prisons or a judicial system, all those things I understand, those are essential services to government. Some would argue that aspects of them are not, but by and large, they are. But when you start getting into things like, we need to find a way to tax people so that we can get universal pre-K. Universal pre-K? How about if the family wants their child in pre-K, they can figure out a way to do it? I mean, I'm just looking at this thinking back when I was a kid. I'd like to think I grew up fairly well adjusted, despite, you know, things in life that could have thrown me a curve. And it didn't require pre-K to get it done. It didn't require family medical leave to get it done. But Pelosi says, well, how would we cut these things? Well, how about you just cut them? I know that sounds like common sense. I realize what I'm doing. Okay, slow your roll, Phil. You've apparently had too much caffeine and chocolate. You're really asking them to use common sense in Washington, D.C. Well, yes, I am. Yes, I am. And I don't think it's too much to ask. We get folks that get elected all the time that say they're going to go up there and bring common sense solutions, and they don't do it. But right now, Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, is saying, Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, he says, I pray for them every night, and I wish them well, and we give them lots of love. What he's saying is they are under an extreme amount of pressure. And then I'm sure that's true. It's more than the usual pressure, because right now what some people are saying is that the Biden administration's entire agenda is on hold and potentially going to collapse if he can't get this bill passed. That's where we are. And all it takes is just a little bit of nuance. The margins are so thin in both the House and the Senate, they got to have every vote. Every vote. And if they're going to do it through reconciliation, which, if you're not familiar, so there's the standard opportunity for debating a bill with filibuster options, and it requires, 60 votes, I believe it is, in the Senate to get past the filibuster, unless they move through in what's called reconciliation, which is basically a cheap shot. They say, well, it's budget-related, therefore we can do it. So that way they pack everything they want into the budget-related items, and they cram it through, and those are not filibustered. Those have to go through on a simple majority. Well, that's danger zone. Right now, if they lose one, if one Democrat senator has a heart attack or something happens and they can't, or they have to resign, I'm just telling you, if one Democrat senator is gone, the balance of power has completely shifted and none of these bills pass. That's how close it is. That's how close it is. Well, listen, we're going to move to a short break right now. When we get back from that, I've got some stuff on things that are happening that you're going to like on taxes in Alabama. I hope. More to come on that. At the top of the hour, State Senator Arthur Orr is going to unpack it for us a little bit more and tell us what he's hoping as a budget chairman they can do for us in the next legislative session. All right, more to come, folks. Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here hosting Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Hey, listen, by the way, I got to tell you guys about my friends at Otter Creek Farm. Before I go any further, just hear me when I say this. I go out there all the time. I mean, I'm super familiar with this place. Charlene and I have gone out there and stayed overnight. We've eaten dinner out there. I've gone shooting out there. I mean, I'm just telling you. What a beautiful oasis this place is, right smack in the middle of North Alabama. And it's by the way, it is now considered one of the premier wing shooting destinations across the Southeast United States. If you like hunting quail and pheasant, they've got the guides, the guns, the dogs. They've got hundreds of manicured acres. They will square you away on that. But they also, it's a wedding venue. I mean, you can have your wedding there. I'm just telling you, in a pavilion by the lake, you've got a culinary team that will help you plan your events and just... Gosh, folks, you got to check it out. Otter Creek Farm at ottercreekfarmstead.com. ottercreekfarmstead.com. Hey, I'm going to tell you about some possible tax cuts coming, but I'm going to let Arthur Orr really talk to you about it at the top of the hour. Before I do that, since I'm talking about state politicians, I got to jump aside just for a minute for some breaking news. So it's 2:53 on Wednesday afternoon, the 15th, and it appears that Governor Ivey may have some more, what I would call some more credible competition in the gubernatorial race coming up. Yep. So here's the thing. So I got two stories in my hand, paper. I print them both out. So you remember Tim James? So his dad, Fob James, who, you know, I got mixed feelings about, but Fob James was the governor of Alabama twice. And Fob James, his son Tim, has already run for governor once. Back in, when was this? 2010, I think. And didn't win, but he's considering jumping into the race again. So everybody thought he was about to do a press conference today about that on the steps of the Capitol. Tim James calls for a press conference on the steps of the Capitol. What does that sound like? An announcement. But then it got a little weird. So Tim James comes out today, does his press conference on the steps of the Capitol, and instead of talking about running for governor, he says, well, that's something for another day. He was there instead to attack issues like critical race theory, transgender rights, and the use of yoga exercise in public schools. What? I get it. Those are things that I can see where he might have an opinion on those. He called a press conference on the steps of the Capitol as a non-elected citizen, everybody thinking he's going to be there to announce he's running for governor, only to say what he was there to do was talk about conservative values and to identify things like critical race theory, transgender rights, and the use of yoga in public schools as being critical issues that he just wanted to get the press together to talk about. I do not get it. I mean, so some are saying that what he's trying to do is establish his conservative bona fides and get his name in the news and build up to a point where he can make an announcement. I got news. The whole thing just feels weird to me, extremely weird. Now, Tim James is a viable candidate. He's already run a statewide race before. He could self-fund his race if he had to because the James family is fairly wealthy. And he's got, you know, his father's background as a previous governor of the state of Alabama. And I'm sure they got their own network. They've got their own people, their own supporters from days gone by. But to do this and to call it, well, okay, whatever. Anyway, but the other person who is raising some eyebrows, so Todd Stacey, who's been on the show with us here before, he runs Alabama Daily News. Todd Stacey has a little piece he does called Inside Alabama Politics. You have to have a subscription to get to it. I do have a subscription, so I'm reading an article that I printed off of IAP, Inside Alabama Politics. You know, we got candidates for U.S. Senate right now, one of whom is Linda Blanchard, the former Trump-appointed ambassador to Slovenia, who is now running for U.S. Senate, but she's considered to be such a long shot that some folks are saying her campaign for U.S. Senate has pretty much already stopped. Without officially announcing her withdrawal from the race, there's zero activity going on. And she's even parted ways with her Senate campaign consulting team and hired a new consultant. She issued a press release the other day without mentioning her run for U.S. Senate. It's largely believed that Linda Blanchard, who can self-fund her race, is seeking the Trump endorsement to run against Kay Ivey. Well, that's going to be interesting. I don't know that she has the street cred, the name ID, or the experience to qualify to run for governor of the state of Alabama. But she may have a Trump endorsement, and what would that do? Well, Trump endorsements do still mean a lot, especially in Alabama. So it's going to be interesting to see, as Tim James does press conferences for nothing, and Linda Blanchard can self-fund a run for governor, we'll see what happens. We will see what happens. That's breaking news for you because those things are happening today. All right, just happened today. All right, set that one aside. Let me get this story right here. So my friend Arthur Orr is coming on in a few minutes. And Arthur has recently been in the news. He's a budget chairman. And that means he's part of the leadership of the Alabama State Senate. He's been down there. Let's see, I got elected in 2010. I was there for two terms. He had already been there, I believe, for at least a term before me. And he's there again a term after me. So he should be in his fourth term, I believe, right now. And he is one of the only ones who scored 100% on the Alabama Policy Institute's legislative scorecard. He is the author and the sponsor of the no-vaccine passport bill that is now the law in Alabama. And he is now saying that he is pushing for a tax cut in the upcoming legislative session. Now, there's different versions of what a tax cut could mean. My hope is what he's going to do is give us some more details. On a recent interview with Jeff Poor, my buddy who comes on once a week here for the Grand Council on Thursdays, he's down at 106.5 on the coast, the Jeff Poor Show. But Jeff had an interview with him the other day in which he said that they are really starting to get their pencils out and look at what they can send back to the people of Alabama. Well, about freaking time, because the surpluses and the increased spending are to the point that you have to look at it and go, like I said earlier, when's enough enough, guys? When is enough enough? It is time to send something back. And so what we're looking at right now is, he said we could raise the standard deduction, you know, give you the ability to deduct more from your taxes. But he also, I have heard said before, that perhaps the business privilege tax for Alabama or even the grocery tax for Alabama could be on the chopping block. I think those two would have a dramatic impact and go a long way towards helping people forget that they raise the gas tax, which everybody has to pay to be able to drive. So, folks, when we get back at the top of this hour, my buddy, State Senator Arthur Orr, will be on the line, and we'll see what he has to say about possible tax cuts for Alabama citizens here in the great state of Alabama. We'll be right back, Right Side Radio, after this.